It is 6 minutes after 7 o'clock, Powerless 9. We're getting into the second hour of our Power Business Show. And as we said, we are going to be in conversation, of course, particularly trying to get into some of the detail around the, you know, the report that's come from the Center for Development and Enterprise. And pretty much they're asking six questions about a basic income grant, and pretty much looking at a juxtaposition of poverty and a basic income grant, and whether the things that it will solve and the things that it won't solve. And also they've gotten, of course, into some modeling. How much would it be, and at a particular, big level. And so they've done some scenario analysis there with the help of Intellidex as well. And so we're going to really get into that conversation. And we are joined online by Anne Bernstein, who is the Executive Director at CDE. Anne, good evening and welcome back.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. I'm pleased to be on your show.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you here, Anne. You know, this report that you guys have, put together, poverty and a basic income grant, six big questions about a big, and just getting into, the six questions. Question one is, why is South Africa thinking about a big now? Why do proponents of a big say they want it? Does South Africa already do a lot of redistribution? Can we afford it? Will a big induce more rapid economic growth? And what alternatives exist for reducing poverty? And I think it's such lovely questions. And maybe it'll be prudent for us to then go question by question and go, one question by, and see what are the insights that are coming out of the study that you guys have done. So, and I'm going to start with the first question. Why is South Africa thinking about a basic income grant now?
Fiso, poverty in this country is now worse than ever. In 2014, the statistics showed that it was about 55% of the population. And if you think of everything that's happened since then, low growth, the pandemic, the way we managed the pandemic, the floods, the July unrest, and we're just not getting employment, we think poverty is over 60%. The key cause of poverty is the world-breaking unemployment rate in this country. And until we introduced this 350 Rand sort of SRD grant during COVID, we do lots of redistribution, but we don't provide support for unemployed people over the age of 18. I think the other issue is that it seems to us the ruling parties lost confidence in their economic strategy to deliver jobs or deal with poverty. And there's an election coming up, and a basic income grant is seen as essential for their electoral viability. Sure. So I think that's why there's much more heated discussion about a big now.
But I mean, there was the Taylor Committee as early as 2002, and that looked at, did a comprehensive study on social, support in South Africa and the efficacy thereof. And one of the things they did study coming out of the Taylor Committee and some of their recommendations were that South Africa must phase in a basic income grant. And that was as early as 2002, 2003.
We're in a very different position now. Mm. That was before we had the scale of child support grants that we have now. So it's really, we've passed that by. We're in a very different situation. South Africa does a lot of redistribution. We do cash grants, that non-contributory, it's called non-contributory cash grants to 18.4 million people. Child support, old age, pensions, disability, and so on. And we do that quite well. It's well targeted. It reaches the people we're trying to get to, by and large. We also do a lot of other redistribution.
And sorry to disturb you on that point, Ned, because it is one of the other questions, question three. I do want us to get there. But just sticking on this one specifically, I remember, going through the details of that Taylor Committee report, and they did look at other, kind of social support grants, etc., in terms of the need for the existence and the value. But when they look specifically at the basic income grant, they studied the manufacturing sector, and they asked questions will this, for example, result in people doing job stayaways? Will it result in higher productivity levels and higher profitability? And those were more industry type questions around actually having a basic income grant does this and that also for industry, and it goes beyond it being a social good.
Well, I'm now going to go ahead in our conversation and say that, look, if we could give people, let's call it 800 rand a month, because there are different propositions on the table, but yeah, say 800 rand a month. If we could give people that, there's no doubt that those people would have more money and they would spend that money and you would get some economic stimulus. Mm. But there are a number of points you have to remember. Mm-hmm. Firstly, if you fund a big through taxes, we've got to find those taxes. And the impact of pulling those taxes out of the economy, if you like, to give it to poor people, has enormous consequences. It's not free. Yeah. You can't just do this and there's no impact on the economy. So you have to think about that. But the 2015 Davis Tax Committee established that 45 billion increase in tax rates, which is nowhere near what the big proponents are asking for, somewhere between 200 and 300 billion. The Davis Tax Committee said that 45 billion would reduce economic output. The Department of Social Development expert panel of late last year also concludes that higher taxes will slow growth, even after taking into account the increased spending stimulus by poor households. So the point about a big is that it's not some, you know, it's not like this is an ecosystem. Mm. You've got to raise money to pay for a big, somewhere between 200 and 300 billion per year, and you've got, it then has an impact on all sorts of other things. And we'll come to that if we go through the questions.
Sure. And I mean, and
it's not simple.
100%, and I think it mustn't scare us because it's complex, you know. And to the point around even the, you know, the Davis Committee, you know, when they were looking at that, is that pretty much, I guess, was an assessment of how far are we on our Laffer curve? And just to the power listeners, pretty much in saying that the Laffer curve explains the extent to which an additional increase in taxes then will ultimately increase or have a positive or negative impact, in essence, in overall output in an economy. And so the context of that assessment was pretty much asking us particularly how far we are on a Laffer curve. And also then it wasn't, I guess, it had taken a smoothed out, for example, view around the rate of growth of taxes over a particular period of time. And so I think for me, that particular assessment is only looking at one, firstly, taxes as the only mechanism of raising a big, but two, also looking at a very static picture around the tax environment in South Africa and whether or not that creates any more room for taxation. And yes, we're looking at somewhere between 200 billion and 300 billion for a big, but you know, SAA, we funded them over time. Eskom, we funded them over time. We don't also get into a question around discriminating on even existing resources, particularly in pursuit of a big.
But Sifiso, let me make another point, sure, which is that South Africa already today, we already spend more than we can afford. Okay, so we've had one of the fastest growing rises in our debt of any country, from about 28% of GDP to 70%. We already are, I don't know what the right words are, but we're already in fiscal trouble. For the last 2 to 3 years, the budget has been cutting essential things. We're cutting the amount of money we give to basic education. Mm. We're cutting the amount of money we give to policing and to other, you know, absolutely vital functions, many of which are designed to help the poor. Mm. So that's where we are today. We're already spending unaffordably. Now you have to say, what are we going to do? Wouldn't it be great if we could give people some money because they're struggling? And it's absolutely catastrophic, the situation the country's in. Mm. But you have to think about where will that money come from? How are you going to pay for it? Are you ready to increase VAT? Are you ready to raise taxes? And what impact does that have on the rest of the economy? So there's some big questions to ask here, and we're saying a large permanent new spending commitment will make matters worse.
Sure. And I mean, I think after this break, and we're going to get into some global case studies of guys who, even when they were in some fiscally constrained environments, Brazil, for example, have piloted some of these big programs, and those have come out with really positive results. But we're going to pick that up and right after the spot break.
Business Term Advance has made it easier to access business funding for SMEs.
6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m. on Power 98.7.
Power listener, it is 34 minutes after 7 o'clock. And of course, we continue our conversation with Ant Bernstein, who is the executive director at CDE, and simply, you know, unpacking, I guess, the tough questions around this basic income grant thing, and particularly in a context where we're seeing poverty levels continuing to rise, inequality as well, and all of the things, of course, that are associated with that. And pretty much, you know, we've spent quite a bit of time talking about is it fundable? And if it is fundable, where? But a big thing that came up as well is around the debt levels in the country that just makes it wholly unsustainable for us to borrow to fund a program like this. But ultimately, as we said, is that this is mostly around a big issue, which is around poverty in South Africa. And now the last question in the report that the CDE did publish is, what alternatives exist for reducing poverty? Anne?
Well, the truth is there is no magical solution to reducing poverty, sadly. We've made appalling policy choices over more than a decade. This was topped off by the pandemic and how we managed this and the consequences of that, so that South Africa has managed to dig itself into a very, very deep hole. We're in real trouble on almost every front, and that's why we have so much poverty today. But poverty can be reduced. It has been in other countries, and we can do it. But this requires a very different approach to economic growth, to jobs, to redistribution and governance. It has to be different from what we're doing today.
And I mean, the thing that often comes, and is probably the one place where I do get stuck all the time, is this, I guess, like falsehood that we think in South Africa there's trickle-down economics with respect to economic growth and poverty alleviation and employment creation, etc. We don't see that, and that's why we're able to see 13 years of jobless growth, for example, right?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you, Sifiso.
Okay.
I don't think we had jobless growth in the 2000s when we had 4-5% growth for about 4-5 years. We actually produced 2 million new jobs in that period. So I don't buy that argument. I think what happens is we don't have growth, and we don't take the bold decisions that are needed to get much faster growth. We don't encourage a more labor-intensive growth, and we need to take those hard choices.
And that's exactly where I wanted to double-click on. It's the kind of growth that we need. It's not growth per se, because we did. 2008, for the next 13 years following, that was jobless growth in terms of the...
Yeah, but we had state capture. We had very bad governance, and we had state capture. So, you know, we had people in government whose main interest was getting rich rather than improving the lives of poor people in this country.
Sure. And then I want to get into this poverty conversation, bringing it back, right, is that, you know, the literature now is quite interesting, because it now looks at poverty in kind of as multidimensional poverty. It's a poverty of nutrition, poverty of health, poverty of education, poverty of social capital and social mobility, and then wage poverty. And so this big issue On the one side, seems like it solves the wage poverty. But what's interesting about it, and I guess this is why we do find that the studies suggest that it does have developmental outcomes, is that it helps people discriminate between, you know, healthcare and food, etc., in an environment where if you are feeling a little bit ill and you've got 350 rand, between that and printing a CV, you might think, actually, let me get some meds. And that in and of itself actually does then, of course, result in better health outcomes. And so when we then look at, you know, alternatives for poverty reduction, particularly in this lens of this multidimensional poverty, where do you think we ought to double click?
Look, my view is the following. The most important route out of poverty is a job. Former President Kgalema Motlanthe said it the other day. I agree with him 500%. Yeah. Getting a job is the most important route. Should we have better health care? We do have free access to free health care for poor people. It's just that we're running our health system so badly. We spend a lot of money. We're running it appallingly. Mm. So I think we have governance issues. That's one. Secondly, we have a terrible basic education system and skill system. We spend a lot of money. We get very little value for it. For all the people who are sitting in schools where they don't learn to read, write, or add sums.
Yeah.
So we should be doing much better at that. The people benefiting from South Africa at the moment are not the poor. They're the sort of the elites, the people, the civil servants and others, many of whom, not all, many of whom are not delivering the jobs they're supposed to do. So what we're saying is we've got to maximize growth, we've got to make it much more labor intensive, and we've got to improve the effectiveness of all existing redistribution.
Sure.
And we need a different approach to governance. Mm. We need to get rid of the crooks, and we need a real sense of urgency. People are suffering, and there isn't a sense of a government that is focused on mission-critical activities. It's all a bit slow, and, you know, we are making a little bit of progress. But if you're a poor person, this isn't helping you very much.
Mm. And, I mean, I think, sure, because I quite enjoyed the report as I was going through it, and I think as I was going through it, for me, you know, I think you guys kind of very gently touched on it, but now you're touching on it, is this quality of institutions as a critical mechanism for poverty eradication. And we've seen the decline of institutions over the last 15, 20 years. And that, of course, then clearly exacerbated the level of poverty that we're seeing in the country. But before you lean on that, and I'm just going to quickly take a call.
No. I have to run. You asked me to talk till 7:45, yes. Actually, and this is a great conversation. I'm happy to come back,
happy.
I have to go.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. And thank you very much.
I'm happy to talk to you. You've raised all sorts of issues you and I can argue about.
Absolutely.
From trickle down to many other things.
Sure.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. I'm happy
to come back.
Thank you.
And, okay,
and that power listener was Anne Bernstein, who is the executive director at the CDE. We're going to quickly take the call, and then after the call, of course, and then we'll continue to the last conversation that we're going to have. That is it, Foodie.